Good morning. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF, and I got an interesting suggestion yesterday, and I thought I might try it out as we move forward, but I had someone call me and ask me if I could, instead of doing one-off episodes of these little history segments, if I could do a series on a subject. His suggestion was, since it is 100 years since America's entry into World War I, I might do a series on America's involvement in World War I. That sounded pretty interesting to me, so I think I'm going to give that a shot. I'm going to do a five-part series on America's involvement in World War I, mostly focusing on the Army side of things. Probably wrapping things up, however, with a episode about the Treaty of Versailles. But when we talk about America's entry into World War I, and especially when we start talking about the military side of things, we can't really start speaking about it with any substance unless we talk about John J. Pershing a bit. Major General John J. Pershing was, of course, in charge of the American Expeditionary Force, the army that would go to Europe. And right up front, I might say that I personally have a bit of a soft spot for the man. His nickname was Blackjack, and actually, my brigade in the army was also nicknamed Blackjack, the 2nd Armored Brigade of the 1st Cavalry Division. So, of course, we all know that World War I wasn't really America's idea, and President Woodrow Wilson did try pretty hard to keep us out of it. In fact, he ran his second term of election on the platform that he had kept us out of war. However, between the sinking of the Lusitania, the Zimmermann Telegraph, and Germany's ongoing unrestricted submarine warfare, as well as lots of other contributing factors, not the least of which being that we had loaned millions of dollars to Britain at this point, we did eventually decide to get involved. We formally declared war in April of 1917, and President Wilson put Major General John J. Pershing in charge of the American Expeditionary Force, once again the army that would go to Europe. Pershing had two major philosophies about World War I. The first was that he realized this war was nothing like what his men would be prepared for. Early in his life, he'd fought Native Americans, and later on, he'd been put up against badly prepared Spanish troops in the Spanish-American Wars. In both wars, he learned that mobility had been important. World War I was being fought by the best-trained soldiers in the world, but the troops were in trenches and didn't move much. In addition, tanks and gases were being used for the first time, as well as machine guns, although Pershing ended up famously underestimating machine guns. Pershing insisted that the U.S. soldiers should have some training in these new forms of combat before they left for Europe. His second thought was that U.S. troops shouldn't be used as replacements in British and French units. They should have their own units with U.S. officers. Now, that really upset the Allies. The British and French had been fighting for 3 years and their units were depleted. Who are these Americans to come and insist that they knew what to do and that their side was right and that they wouldn't take orders? But Pershing felt that U.S. citizens working under foreign officers felt too much like they were colonials again, so his units stayed intact. His policies had consequences, of course. Troops came slowly to Europe, and because the U.S. soldiers were inexperienced in trench warfare and battles in general, the Allies didn't end up trusting them very much. And because U.S. soldiers weren't used as replacements, there was no easy way to prepare them for battle either. For the most part, they were assigned to areas that didn't get attacked much for a long while. The U.S. troops did get involved in fighting, but slowly. It wasn't until May of 1918 that they took part in major battles, our first real major battle being the Battle of Cantigny, which I'll probably do an entire segment about. It was hugely important not only to the war, but also to America's involvement in the war. U.S. forces did lead that battle, and they did end up winning a victory, and this was enough to convince the Allies that the Americans were ready to sort of stand on their own two feet. This was actually quite fortunate timing. By June, 10,000 soldiers were landing in France every single day, and the Germans that had already been fighting for 4 years were starting to get worn down. Even with the trenches, this was just too much for the Germans to overcome simply by numbers, and come November, the Allies would actually end up winning the war. After all was said and done, America ended up losing about 116,000 American soldiers. The majority of these were not actually combat deaths, they were actually deaths to disease and sickness. And as a broad overview of America's involvement in World War I, it actually wasn't our military technology or might that ended up winning the war. It was mostly that we rebolstered numbers and stood strong against an already weary German army. We tipped the scales just enough to be able to end World War I. Major General John J. Pershing would actually argue for a complete military victory punitive ceasefire terms after the war. Pershing was highly critical of the Treaty of Versailles, and in 1921, Pershing ended up becoming the chief of staff of the U.S. Army and later wrote My Experience of War in 1931. John Joseph Pershing died in 1948. And that has been just a little bit about John J. Pershing and sort of a broad overview of World War I. Thank you for joining me for part one of my five-part series of America's involvement in the Great War. If you like these little history segments, I do remember you can find them online at kggfradio.com. Click on the On Demand tab and just find a history segment that looks interesting to you. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.